All right, welcome everyone to the Week 8 podcast, Take the Points. Tom Zeleznak here in Hartford, Connecticut. I am live via Skype, not with Dan Partridge, who is still in a Adrian Peterson sex orgy, but I'm here with Sam Pierce, our guest host for today, live via Skype from Syracuse, New York. Hi, Sam.
How's it going, Tom?
Good. Sam is decked out in his Mississippi State Bulldogs shirt. He is not a bandwagon jumper. Would you like to explain your roots and then we can jump right into the Auburn Mississippi State game?
Sure. So born in upstate New York, like you and a lot of your friends, lived here for a matter of months. When my dad joined the Air Force, we lived in a few different states, but predominantly Mississippi throughout childhood. Grew up in the Golden Triangle region, which Starkville is right there. Mm-hmm. And so as a kid, you know, elementary school age, Mississippi State was the team. Now they always lost to Alabama and Auburn and LSU, but that was my first favorite team. So
were they ever good, or were they like the doormat?
They had a coach named Jackie Sherrill for a little while, and they in the late 80s, early 90s, and they were competitive. They weren't a doormat like Vanderbilt, but they weren't they weren't Florida or LSU.
So would you say this is so far the best season ever in history of Mississippi State?
Hands down, not even close.
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure if there was some, you know, crazy magical season in the 80s or 70s or something like that that I was not aware of.
It's a program that's always put good players into the NFL. And they've had years where they get out to 5-0 or 6-1. A couple of years ago, they were 7-0 going into their game with Alabama. And it was a big deal. And Alabama won by a few touchdowns as usual. So they've had years where they get out to a good start, but nothing like this.
Okay. And can you tell the listeners just about growing up in Mississippi in general? What's it like down there? I mean, are any of the hick stereotypes true? Is that just nonsense?
I got a little bit of both because my dad was in the Air Force. So when you're on base, you're kind of sheltered from that. But we lived off base. And I went to school in a place called Caledonia, Mississippi. The school mascot was the Confederates, the Caledonia Confederates.
That's nice.
The state flag was essentially the Confederate flag. Picture the top of the Dukes of Hazzard car. So it's a different place. But I will say this, even as an outsider and with my family, my parents being from New York and coming down there, and they were Yankees, but the people were great. You won't find hospitality like the South. So loved it. Loved growing up there.
Okay. And now you're in Syracuse, which we will definitely discuss later. But let's go straight to the game. We'll do our quick Week 7 recap before we get into this week's lines. The big game, of course, Auburn, Mississippi State. Mississippi State came out early, got a few turnovers, were up 21-0. And at that point, the game was basically over. Even though I thought Auburn would come back, it turned out to be even play for the rest of the game. And that early lead and those early touchdowns were all that Dak Prescott needed.
They were dominant, and if you had any doubts, they eliminated the doubt. I was worried. I wanted them to win. I thought Auburn would probably come in and win a close game, but the way they came out and handled Auburn from the start, I thought was very impressive. And I think that resume now, what they've done over the last 3 weeks, I think it was deserving that the voters leaped them ahead of Florida State into the one spot.
Yeah. And I came into that game thinking Auburn was the best team in the country. I still think they're a playoff caliber team. I mean, I didn't see anything to make me think, you know, Auburn's overrated. What I saw instead was that Mississippi State, after beating a couple top 10 teams that turned out to be maybe not so top 10, you know, LSU and A&M, they're yeah, top 25 teams, but definitely not top 10 worthy.
Agree. The thing about Auburn, though, that I'd be worried about if I was an Auburn fan is if you look closely at their schedule, they have like the most brutal of the brutal schedules because they still have to play at Ole Miss, at Alabama.
Right. And I've been telling this to Dan for the whole, he says that Auburn's going to win the national championship. my hesitation, you know, I think they might be the best team, but my hesitation is always with the schedule, which is absolutely brutal. And now that we've seen the Mississippi State and Mississippi teams are clearly for real, I think it's going to be very difficult, but we'll see. What else did you take away from that game?
One, that Mississippi State is for real. Two, this is kind of an aftermath thing. For all of the, there's been a little bit of overreaction, and this is outside just the Mississippi State game, but Alabama, Auburn, there's been a little bit of overreaction that those teams' seasons are done. So to your point and your ongoing conversation with Dan about where Auburn ends up, same with Alabama. They all essentially still control their own destiny because they all get a shot at each other in that SEC West. So I'm happy about Mississippi State. Their fans are happy, but the season, you know, Mississippi State got those last two games at home. They still have to go on the road to Alabama and to Ole Miss the last game of the year. So nothing's decided.
Yeah, absolutely not. I looked at some schedules. I do think the Egg Bowl at the end of the year is going to be very crucial, but by no means is it guaranteed that either of those teams win the SEC West or go undefeated or even end with one loss. I mean, I was looking at both Mississippi team schedules and they could easily lose two games. So,
undoubtedly. Mississippi State has a tough game with Kentucky coming up. Who knows? A year like this year, you never know.
Absolutely. There was one thing I wanted to talk about that isn't really related to the game per se, but Dan Mullen was on College Game Day last Saturday morning, and he said something that I thought was really great. Now, I'm just going to paraphrase because I don't have the exact quote, but he came to Mississippi State 6 years ago, and he told the fans, you know, it's not that we get great and then you show up. You guys start showing up now, you create a good atmosphere, and then the team will get better. And when you look around the last 10 years, I think this is what happened at Oregon 10 years ago. This is what started happening at Baylor 5 years ago. The way that these teams who aren't the top powerhouse teams steal recruits is that they become known as like the cool place to play, the electric atmosphere, you know, the great stadium and the great home field advantage. And if you're a mid-level team, I think this is something to look at. You know, hire a great coach because that's where you can get an amazing advantage. And then somehow get your students to show up and make it a rowdy atmosphere.
Yeah. And one advantage Mississippi has over someplace like Oregon is the in-state talent. Alabama and LSU better hope that either Mississippi school or both never finds a way to get their act together and keep all the kids in-state, because it's not going to be good news for Bama and Auburn and LSU. Mississippi's a great, great high school football state. And now that they've worked on that atmosphere that you were talking about, I think that speaks a lot to their future.
Yeah, maybe having grown up in the South, maybe you can tell people from the North or elsewhere what it is about the culture that just makes all these great high school football players.
Well, number one is not just the talent of the players, but just the meaning of SEC football in the South. In places like Mississippi and Alabama, you don't have professional teams. So that's everything. Whereas, you know, you're familiar with Penn State and everyone in Pennsylvania loves Penn State. A lot of people probably don't love Penn State as much as they love the Steelers or the Eagles, especially when one of those teams is doing really well. So I think that mentality that this is it, this is our team, permeates everywhere, everything. Secondly, just the culture of high school football, it's not just a Texas thing. It's Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, certainly, and Florida. And then obviously demographics come into play. So,
yeah, we try to explain to people the significance of the culture and starting kids young and when that's the big thing. I mean, in upstate New York, it's all about lacrosse. Now, we don't have any better athletes than anywhere else in the country, but as soon as you're 5 years old and can hold a lacrosse stick, they throw you out on Shove Park with these adults screaming at you about how lacrosse is the most important sport. And that's all you do is play that. And our high school was number one the whole time I was there. You know, a bunch of schools around us are great at lacrosse. Then you go somewhere else in the country and you realize, oh, nobody really cares about this sport.
Yeah. So. Well, I think it's something that is built over decades. These schools, their spring games, they sell out their 100,000 person stadiums. So it's just something over many, many years. Baseball is huge in certain parts of the South too. Mississippi State is a great baseball school, for example. And you can see, not that most of your listeners probably follow college baseball, but a lot of those Southern schools have not only a good football program, but a great baseball program. And look at where the SEC is in college basketball. It's really not that competitive. So I think, you know, it's partly just it's something that's tradition that builds over decades.
Right. I think the weather plays into it as well. When you can play outdoor sports like football and baseball, you know, it's 80 degrees all year round. Of course, you're going to do that. The reason UConn's great at basketball is because it's fucking freezing 7 months a year.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, we're talking about, you get into the rural South and you are talking about very poor parts of the country and there's nothing else to do. And for a lot of people, that scholarship and that chance to get out is a big deal. If you fail at lacrosse in Camillus, you're probably from an upper middle class family and going to college anyway. But in rural Mississippi, that might be your only shot is football or baseball.
Right, and players down south, you know, they'll transfer schools, they'll move to a different state to play at a high school that's got a great program if they think it'll help them. That never happens in upstate New York or anywhere else in the Northeast.
Or even the upper Midwest. I mean, it's just the South is just different.
Right. And you went to school at Wisconsin, so you're familiar with the Midwest as well. Mm-hmm. We're going to get into that. We're going to do a lot of Big Ten talk later on, but okay. I want to try to move through this intro so we can get into the lines.
No problem.
Any thoughts on Ole Miss, you know, where they belong in the top five, and also TCU Baylor, the 61-58 game?
TCU Baylor, I'll just say it was fun to watch, but it was fun to watch, but unimpressive. First TCU blew it, because if they had back to back Oklahoma and Baylor won those games, I think despite the Big 12 and not having a championship game, I think they kind of have an inside track on the playoff. So they blew it. And for them not to be able to hang on and win with that lead in the fourth quarter is, embarrassing, but it's just become indicative of that conference. Those scores. So it'd be a lot more fun if it didn't happen every other week. The one thing I'll say, and with the Big 12, I don't know how you feel, and when we get into lines, we can talk about this more, but I think over the last decade, Big 12 is hands down the most unpredictable conference. There's always a favorite, and it seems like one of them loses to another one late in the year. I think of like the Sproles game in the Big 10 or Big 12 championship against Oklahoma. I think if either Oklahoma or Oklahoma State late in the year losing to each other when one was clearly better. So I'm less sold than you on Baylor. I think they all end up with one loss. And then I think the fact that they don't have a championship game hurts them now.
How about Ole Miss? What do you think about them?
Ole Miss is great. Defense is fantastic. I think people had worries about Bo Wallace, but he has played very well all season. I don't know if Mississippi State is even the best team in their state, let alone the country. I think Ole Miss is very good. They're going to win this weekend against Tennessee, and they still have Auburn as well, but get them at home. Mississippi State's gotten more attention the last couple weeks, but I think Ole Miss is they're 1-1A.
Right. And the beauty of the playoff is, you know, now you only have to finish in the top four, which everyone sort of controls their own destiny, as you said before. I mean, if you can finish the season as an SEC team with one loss, even, you're probably going to be in that top four. So I wouldn't really worry. The rankings are meaningless. I mean, they're always somewhat meaningless, but especially this year.
The thing that's going to be tricky is, and I don't think it'll happen. I think the West ends up sending two, but what happens if Georgia shows up and knocks off the SEC West winner in the championship game? Then Georgia has to get in. And then what do you do about the rest of the West? If the one that lost the championship game has two losses and somebody else only has one, but lost in a straight up tie to get into that. There's a lot of possibilities.
Yeah. Weird things happen. I don't know. I'm not a big Georgia believer despite their big win last week, but we'll get to that. I want to just go through the Heisman odds quickly. Okay. This will be the first time we talk about Heisman. Okay. So we've got Dak Prescott 2-1, yep. Mariota 3-1, Everett Golson 5-1, Bryce Petty 6-1, your Wisconsin's Melvin Gordon 12-1, a little bit of a sleeper there. Dr. Bo Wallace 15-1, and then a couple of long shots that have a chance. You've got Amari Cooper of Bama 20-1, and then Nick Marshall coming off a tough game, but still one of the best quarterbacks in the country at 25-1. To me, Nick Marshall is the best bet if you're looking for value on your money. But I do think Mariota's my favorite, just because I think Dak is going to be hard to keep up some of the numbers and the performances he's done facing this tough competition for the next 6 weeks.
Is it which one's the best bet first, or who do I think is going to win, or who do I think is actually the best player?
Well, if you're betting that, who do you bet on? So take into account who you think will win, also the odds. You know, Dak at 2-1, I don't see a ton of value there, because while he might win, I think it's less than 50% chance with all the great players in that list.
Yeah. But I don't think Mariota's going to win either. I don't, and even if I did, I'd take Dak at 2-1 before I'd spend 3-1 on Mariota.
Yeah, the Heisman's not a good bet. What I do usually is, if it's anything close of a Heisman race, just wait until the last week and then just pick the favorite. You don't win a ton of money, but there's almost never a Heisman upset. I don't think since Ty Detmer, there's really been a surprise on the night of the Heisman presentation.
True.
Usually the guy who everyone thinks is going to win is the guy who actually wins.
You know, the year that RG3 won, I thought it was up in the air. I think there were five of them that year. And mm-hmm. I thought it was up in the air that year. But I think that Cooper is the best player.
NFL talent-wise, I think so, yeah. People say he reminds them of Andre Johnson, or even, you know, Calvin Johnson, somebody like that. He's going to be a great pro.
I would not bet on Jameis, no matter what.
So I was going to say Jameis is 35-1, and that is by far the worst bet, because he has a 0.0% chance of winning.
Yeah, he's not winning. Herschel Walker was on. I was finished up my work day today, I put on my favorite show, the Paul Feinbaum show, in the background, and just listened, and Herschel Walker was on. And when Herschel Walker is talking about, hey, integrity matters, that's why I didn't vote for the guy last year and I can't vote for him this year. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. So Jameis has no shot. You really think Mariota?
I think so. I think he's going to stack up some huge numbers in that conference. I think, I think Dak, it totally depends on what they do. I mean, if Mississippi State ends the season at number one, undefeated, and makes the playoff, then I think Dak's the clear front runner. I just, I think they're going to get one or two losses somewhere along the way.
Now in 4 years ago, I was saying, as I'm sure were a lot of people, was saying the same thing about Cam.
Right. And that's the problem.
So they've got this great quarterback, but they're going to lose at some point. The Dak's advantage is all of the opportunity. And we all watch those 3:30 Eastern SEC games. And I'm a pretty big fan, maybe not as big as you, of college football, but I have to admit, I don't watch as many Pac-12 games. And I was disappointed when they lost to Arizona again. Mm-hmm. And lost some money that day. I don't hear that many casual fans or casual observers or, you know, talking about Oregon ever. Not me and you having a conversation, but I mean turning on ESPN in the morning as you're getting ready for work and they're talking about the SEC. And I don't hear them talking about Oregon ever.
ESPN is so lazy. I mean, they just go straight for the most salacious or, tantalizing story. They don't care about being fair or actually assessing the teams. There are a few. I mean, Herb Street is great. Greg McElroy, I really like a lot. I think he's Good. Some of those weird like college football live shows that you can catch at like 10:30 at night on a Wednesday, those guys are really good. But just the regular SportsCenter anchors, I find that they generally are not that good about college football. Most of them are into pro sports, I think, in fairness, and so college just isn't a priority to them.
And you're 100% right, but that perception kind of becomes reality as the season goes on. And when you get a front runner like Cam 4 years ago, or possibly Prescott this year, I think that's hard for the other guys to overcome, especially when it's a West Coast guy that doesn't play for USC.
Now that I think about it, I think I agree with you. I'm looking back at the last few years, and it's basically whoever becomes the biggest celebrity throughout the season is the guy who wins the Heisman. I mean, you've got Jameis, you've got Johnny Manziel, Cam, RG3. So I guess in this day and age, the celebrity factor has to be taken into account.
And if you go back like 15 years, remember, I think it was, hey, Ricky Williams is going to break the rushing record, and it becomes this big national story. And then the next year, Dane breaks his record, and it becomes a big national. There's some sort of national story and front runner that emerges throughout the season. And I think that's hard for a West Coast guy to overcome.
Right. And let me be clear, right now, Dak is the favorite and he should be the favorite. I just think as the season plays out, things have potential to change. And if you're looking for a long shot bet, I like Nick Marshall because I do think Auburn is a playoff caliber team. And if they get back in the playoff, then he'll be right in that conversation.
Yeah.
Okay.
So on one of your, just a side note, on one of your
Yeah.
podcasts about, I don't know, 5 weeks from now, you guys are going to have to go over the SEC West tiebreaker scenarios if these guys all end up with one loss.
Oh, it's going to be horrible. The playoff should just be a 7-team playoff with the SEC West and Florida State.
Wait, but then who's out? Arkansas?
No, Arkansas is in. You have all 7 teams from the SEC West and Florida State.
Oh, okay, I got it. All right.
I guess if Georgia knocks off someone in the SEC championship game, they can take Arkansas's spot.
Okay.
But we
Yeah.
don't need any Big 10, Big 12, or
Hey, those two
Pac-12
are playing
teams.
this week.
Oh, so there you go.
Okay, very good.
All right, I want to get into the lines now, Sam. We're going to do it by conference, a little different than we do week to week. We're going to start with the ACC. I have only one game I would like to speak about in this conference. Florida State Notre Dame will be at the end of the podcast, but for now, one game, and that is Syracuse, the Orange, -6 at Wake Forest. I have a couple notes on the game, and then I have a big question for you. My notes are number one, watching Syracuse play Florida State last week. No question in my mind, they should go with Long at quarterback. Stop the rotation, put Long in. He and Ishmael, the wide receiver, are both freshmen. They look good. Let's just get a jump on the future now since you're not winning anything this year. My second note is the over-under in this game is 42 and a half, and both of these teams should be ashamed of themselves because that is a pro over-under, and they're unlike, say, Florida, Missouri, they are not getting that number because of their solid, stout defenses. They are getting it because both offenses are an embarrassment to football. So both of you should be ashamed, and nobody should bet this game. But I guess if you have to, I would go with Syracuse because Wake Forest is like, they would be relegated if they were a soccer team. They're terrible.
As long as the spread stays under 7, I would go with Cuse. It's been moving this week, and it went from 5 to 5.5 to I think 6 the last time I logged in and looked. So as long as it stays under a touchdown, I would go with Syracuse.
Right, because no one in their right mind is going to bet Wake Forest. If you've paid any attention to college football, you just can't. I mean, they're like a high school team.
Well, my favorite stat of the season, I guess, that I heard on ESPN Radio. And if I'm wrong, it was on this joker of a guy, the Axeman in Syracuse. He is this terrible show. So if I got a wrong stat, it's his fault. But he said that Wake has 179 rushes, carries this year for 186 yards.
Oh
And
my
that is,
God.
I mean, that is just like a tr that's so bad. Wake is terrible. So Syracuse should win. But I also don't, as a longtime season ticket holder, I don't trust Syracuse.
Right, and that's what it comes down to.
Now,
That's
they
why.
did name Long the starter today.
Did they?
They
Okay.
did. Yeah, they named Long the starter, and all your observations are right about the freshman. Way back in whatever year it was, I believe 2009. Yeah, so in 2009, Nassib was a freshman, and that was the year that they stupidly brought Paulison, who cannot throw a 15-yard out. And at the tailgate, I would argue with Mahoney and all these other guys, and I hope listeners of your podcast don't mind me talking about all your high school friends, but
No, they're
I
not going
remember.
to know who these names are, but it
Okay, so
doesn't matter.
anyway,
You're talking to a group of
longtime,
guys.
lifelong Syracuse friends, everybody was on board with Paulus coming in, and they said, "Oh, it's good, and it's publicity." And I said, "No, the freshman who, and they, if you remember, they bring Nassib in for a couple plays a game that first month of the season when Paulus is the starter, and he clearly had a gun for an arm, and was a pretty decent quarterback, and they just kept starting Paulus." And I said
Right.
then, it really bothered me, and I would say it now, that Terrell Hunt's so bad, he's so terrible, that if they don't stick with Long, I'll be pretty upset.
What year is Hunt? Is he a junior or a senior?
Isn't he he still has a year left after this year. He's only
Yeah, he needs to just step down or something. He needs to resign. Like, politicians, when they're just hurting the party overall, they just step down.
need to go.
He needs to go spend more time with his family.
Or become like a Nickelback or something.
Like the band Nickelback? He could just
No,
join the band Nickelback.
like an extra defender on passing downs.
I think you're right. He should join Nickelback and just play state fairs. Nickelback featuring Terrell Hunt.
Tom, when you're at the games, when you're in that dingy, depressing building and you
Yes.
watch, especially we have really crummy end zone seats, like as high up as you can go. So when you're
Yes.
watching Syracuse go away from you, so you're at Hunt's back, you watch the receiver cut one way and Hunt throw the other. So it's not the NFL when the ball's out of the quarterback's hand and the
Right.
receiver cuts the wrong way, and it's the example of the interception that's actually the receiver's fault for running the wrong route, but the ball is already out. There's nothing the quarterback can do. Hunt's so slow and terrible, and the receiver has cut one way, and you can watch it all unfold. And you're think and in the Maryland game, they're driving, they're about to get back in the game, and then Hunt throws that awful 70-yard pick six, and that's exactly what happened. The receiver went one like on a hook one way, and Hunt just you watch him slow re release, throw it the other way, pick six, game over. It's bad.
So you are a season ticket holder for
I am.
Syracuse. I remember a few years ago it cost $80 to be a season ticket holder for six games.
It's
I don't
100.
know. It's 100 now? That's fun. It always cracks me up that season tickets to Syracuse cost you and our friend Kevin and others, the same as it would cost me to go to my one annual Penn State game at Penn State.
Oh, same here. When I go back to, I went to Wisconsin, and when I go back for a Wisconsin game, yeah, it's 100, 125, something like that to get a good seat. That's it was actually it's $100, but it's actually 128 is what our group's average came out to this year because we have to pay for our orange pass and our parking pass. So it's actually 128 for all six games this year.
Definitely the best part about living in Syracuse. I mean, you've got the horrible weather. It's cold all the time. It snows a lot. But the great thing about living in Syracuse is you can go to every sporting event the whole year for $100. You get Syracuse, well, not everyone. Syracuse basketball costs, $30 a game. But Syracuse football, you can, for $100, be a season ticket holder and go to six games. And then the minor league baseball, the Syracuse Sky Chiefs. No one has actually paid for a ticket in
No.
20 years.
No.
I've been to
And they have
probably.
Thursday dollar beer nights now.
Right. And so now you can get the ticket for free and you can pay, $6 to have six beers.
Tom, I got like blackout drunk. I had a lot more than six beers. It's dollar Thursday nights at the Chiefs game is dollar beer, dollar hot dog. So not only, how you get like eight beers in, you get pretty hungry. Well, it's only dollar hot dogs too. So $20 gets you a lot of beer and a lot of hot dogs at the Chiefs game. So it's a pretty good deal.
Right. And so what if they're made of rat?
No, they're good. Or they taste good to me.
Yeah, they're not actual food, but at least they taste like it.
And the dollar beers, it's not just Bud Light. You can get Saranac, you can get Magic Hat. They have good stuff on tap for the dollar beers. So,
okay. So I want to go back to you being a season ticket holder at Syracuse. And the reason I bring this up is because of attendance problems. Now, yep. I watched the game when Florida State, the number one team in the country, with the biggest star athlete, Jameis Winston, you know, the biggest celebrity in college football, came to Syracuse last weekend. It was a noon game, granted, not people's favorite time to go. But watching on TV, it looked maybe 2/3 full. And I'm hoping you can, you know, enlighten us. Was it really that empty? And why did people not turn out for this game?
Well, so here's where we're going to get into some heated debate in the Take the Points podcast, because you're more of a lifelong life, even though you don't live here now, but grew up here your whole life. So I think you're going to have a lot more loyalty to SU and the program.
Well, let me give some background. So, attendance problems have been plaguing all of college football. There's a great photo, which I'm going to post on our website with this podcast, from Miami Stadium, the Miami Hurricanes last Saturday. The stadium was so empty that people were playing catch with a football in the seats.
Yeah.
It's an awesome, awesome picture. Then you have Michigan against Minnesota a few weeks back. Couldn't sell tickets, so you bought a couple of Diet Cokes and you would get 2 free tickets to the Michigan game. Now you've got problems. TCU last season had they were within like a 7-point game and they sent out a picture of the stadium and there was no one there. LSU, Bama, you know, even some of these SEC teams, they've had problems, you know. It's not every game. You know, they're still breaking records on occasional big games, but on these, you know, lower level games, they're having trouble selling out. And now Syracuse against the number one team, as I said, 2/3 full. And the other thing I want to say, yes, I grew up in Syracuse, but I am a Penn State fan for life.
Okay.
And I did go to a lot of Syracuse games. I like them and I hope they win, but my allegiance is probably not as strong as you think.
I know about your Penn State pedigree, so, and I appreciate it. I just think I get into this debate about Syracuse with all of my friends here, a lot of your and my common friends. I'm the only one that says it my way, and so we'll see what you have to say. First, overall, just before, because I don't want to lose track of your point. Yes, the attendance is down. I think a big part of the problem is if you're a huge college football fan like us, and you're a student at one of these schools, the fact that nowadays, since the sport has exploded in popularity, as it should have, it's just fucking awesome. But I look at like 2 weeks ago when Ole Miss beat Alabama and Mississippi State beat A&M, and there were like 6 or 7 matchups of ranked teams that day, right?
Right.
And so my wife and I had a bunch of people over. We had a bunch of food. We drank a ton. We watched these games. Everybody's glued to the TV. I've loved college football my whole life. So if I'm 18 or 19 and there's that day going on, as much as I love my school, I might stay in my apartment with my roommates and drink and be flipping around the channels, watching all these awesome games, and they're all available to you. And there's the goal line channel, and the programs become so good on TV late in the year as a Syracuse season ticket holder. You know, when it's Syracuse, Duke, or NC State or someone, it's better than when it was the Big East, but it gets to be later in the year. And it's like, why would I go watch that when the SEC West is going to be decided today? I think that's part of the problem.
And you're not alone. I was reading an article on Bleacher Report, which is a good college football website, and right. They said the same thing. They call it the HD problem, which is essentially the fact that even if you just want to watch one game, the experience on TV with these 70-inch TVs, HD, have all your friends over in the comfort of your own house, people like it. And going to a sporting event, first off, you know, finding parking and getting there is a pain. Going in is a pain. It can be expensive for tickets, as we said. Beers are expensive. it's loud, it's noisy, it's crowded. Some people don't like that. So yep. I've always been a big fan of going to, you know, one Penn State game a year. Part of that is where I live, you know, it's far away. But I live right next to UConn Stadium. I mean, it's 4 minutes from my house, and I'll go to one game a year, because why the hell would I go see UConn when I could watch like Alabama, Florida State, Georgia, Auburn on TV all at the same time?
So I'm with you. And we're, I don't know how you feel. I'm 35, so I feel like I'm getting older. So the fact that I still want to go to, you know, maybe one or two games a year, I go to more. But if I lived somewhere like a better program that I had no affiliation with, I'd still go once or twice because it's fun. I like the game day experience. So getting back to Syracuse for a second.
So let's get into this controversial statement. I want to hear.
So I'm not surprised one bit by the Florida State turnout because I'm a season ticket holder and I see how paltry it is there.
But wouldn't that be the one game a year that the people went to?
It should be. And I'm starting because like you laid it out. So you've got the defending national champ, number one in the country, defending Heisman. The fact that you have all three of those criteria coming into your stadium is really rare. And I think the noon game should have worked in their favor. Meaning, if you're a dad and you've got kids, you don't have to keep them awake for an 8 a.m. kick or 8 p.m. kickoff. You can come to a noon, bring your kids, bring your family, come to a noon game and say, that's the Heisman. This is the number one team in the country. So I'm starting to wonder if the community just doesn't care at all. But I'm going to call it, this is my theory, that it's the chicken and the egg scenario.
Right.
And so here's where I'm going with it. The community largely doesn't support the team. Other than the people that passionately go every week that are a minority, that are filling the seats that are filled, the community largely doesn't support the team. The university largely doesn't support the program. Now, if the community starts supporting the team, then I think the university will do a better job, or vice versa. And that's why I call it chicken and egg. I feel like the community and the university are both waiting for the other one to either, hey, university, put money into your facilities, build a stadium, get rid of this crappy fucking dome that's depressing, and you're the only team in Division I that plays in a dome because college football, part of the atmosphere is being outdoors on a crisp fall Saturday. The dome's depressing. It's terrible. It's not fun. It's awful. And everybody says to me, Tom, this is what people around town say. They say, oh, you don't understand, man. Back in the 90s with McNabb, if your argument starts with back in the 90s, you clearly don't understand what's happened in college football in the last 15 years, the way it's exploded, how important facilities are to recruiting. When you play in a dome in college football, you can never bring recruits in and say, look at playing under the lights against the number one team in the country. You can never say, look at the fucking F-15 flying overhead before the game. You can, like, being on campus, you should be outdoors. Domes work in the NFL, not college. There's a reason Syracuse is the only one playing this old 40-year-old, dingy, depressing building. Do anything different unless the community comes out enthusiastically and supports the team. Community's not going to do that unless the university puts something into facilities. So that's why I say, especially now that they're in the ACC, what do they care? They're collecting the TV money either way. So that's why I call it this chicken and egg scenario. One's got to give. Neither one is. That's my theory.
Okay. So that actually sounds a lot like what I started with the Dan Mullen theory, that the fans show up first and then the team gets better. I'm totally with you on the fact that Syracuse does not adapt well to modern day football. I mean, I remember, I think it was 2006, they tried to implement the wishbone offense. I wish that was a joke.
Well, anything in the Robinson era, we have to forget and move on, I think.
Yeah, so we'll forget about that. But even now, you know, they run more of, I don't know, somewhat of a shotgun, somewhat of a pro style. But, you know, what do you have to lose? They should be running some kind of Baylor-esque, you know, Houston, SMU, Hawaii-esque offense.
They should, but those schools play in small, crappy conferences. Well, with the exception of Baylor, play in small, crappy conferences where you can get away with that. If Syracuse comes out and does that against Florida State, they're just going to go 3-and-out on incomplete passes. What?
With the current talent, they will. But if they recruit for that, they'll do better.
But Tom, how do you possibly recruit? Like, and I don't know if Syracuse brought recruits in for the Florida State
right
weekend, but how do you say to a, to an 18, 17 or 18 year old, let's give him the benefit of the doubt, three-star better recruit, hey, look at what you're going to play in, a depressing building where we're playing the number one team in the country, defending national champ, defending Heisman, and half the building is filled up. And by the way, we're playing one of the smaller stadiums in Power 5 Conference, and we can still only fill half the depressing building despite who's coming in for the day. Come play here. How are you selling that?
I agree with you. Part of the problem is that Midnight Madness, I think, was last week or the week before, and Syracuse is a basketball town. And once that basketball tips off, that's it for football. You say goodbye.
That is, I read a really good article about a year ago in Wall Street Journal. And it was about, which when they do a sports article, it's always really great writing and to the point. Duke, maybe like the preeminent basketball team in the country, isn't hiding behind, we're a basketball school. Duke went out and hired a football coach and played in the ACC title game last year and has progressively gotten better because their administration has said, we can't just say we're a basketball school. Football matters. It pays the bills. We need to make sure that we're not the UConn that gets left out in the cold at the next conference realignment. We have to at least be relevant at football. And if Daryl Gross, who's the athletic director here, if they don't take some sort of the same mentality and say, we can't just hide behind we're a basketball school. They're going to get, you know, I don't know if it'll be 10 years from now or 12 or 15, but that doesn't work. It works with the fans around here. Oh, well, we don't support the team because we're a basketball school. Well, it's going to suck for your basketball program when you get kicked out of a major conference.
Yeah, I could really go on about this for another hour or so, but we're way behind time. I think it's on Armory Square to step up and make more of a game day atmosphere. I'm gonna need the Suds Factory to do like $1 beers after every Syracuse game with a ticket. I'm gonna need.
That's a good idea.
Does Suds Factory even exist anymore?
It does. I'm more of a Tip Hill guy, but yeah, downtown. The Suds is there, and that's not a bad idea for them to do something like that. But the problem is, you can go get the ticket for free.
That it doesn't matter. It's the only way to start. Listen, Syracuse, it's freezing. It's a bunch of kids who grew up partying in the woods. It's all Irish people. They love to drink. Just have Coleman's do some sort of deal where you need your ticket to get in and you get cheap beers and attendance will double for the next game. You hear me? Coleman's, Blarney Stone, all you guys, this is on you.
I will tell them you said that.
Tell them they have a moral obligation to their town to do this.
I'll do the best I can.
All right, let's take a short break, and then we're going to get through the Big 12 and Pac-12 lines pretty quickly.
Very good.
All right, everyone, we're back. I'm here with Sam Pierce, filling in admirably for Dan Partridge this week. Sam, welcome back. We are going to power through the Big 12 and Pac-12 conferences because Sam and I are both Big 10 guys and we want to make sure that we get adequate Big 10 conversation. So we've got Baylor -8.5 at West Virginia. We've got Kansas State at Oklahoma. Oklahoma favored by about a touchdown. And we've got Oklahoma State at TCU. TCU -8. So here's what I like, and then you can add your picks. Baylor, West Virginia, I don't like the line. I think Baylor might be, you know, after that big win, they might be coasting a little bit. The over-under is 80.5, and that's kind of a crazy over-under, but I do think it's going to come in. So I might put a couple bucks on the over and just pray for the greatest, you know, high-scoring game of all time again. Kansas State, Oklahoma, I don't like at all. I think Oklahoma is going to win by about a touchdown. And Oklahoma State at TCU, I like the over-under. I like the over of 62. And TCU, 5-0 against the spread this season. So even though 8 seems like a lot for, you know, two Big 12 teams, I think you have to go with TCU until they break that streak. You know, undefeated against the spread at this point of the season, I don't think you can bet it against a team that has that kind of record. So TCU, Oklahoma State over. Those are my favorites.
One quick thought. You said Oklahoma by about a touchdown. Everything I saw was Oklahoma -7.5, and I hate that half, so I would go Kansas State.
Okay.
If it were seven, I'd go Oklahoma thinking I could push, but hopefully I'll win. 7.5, at that point with the half, I go Kansas State.
Right, and that's one of those games where I think a push is very likely, so I'll probably just stay away.
Me too.
That might be a good one.
Away from the Big 12 in general, other than TCU, I stay away from the Big 12 in general. I would take West Virginia to cover at home.
So Kansas State, Oklahoma is a team I like if you're going to do, a tease or something like that.
Yeah.
I think you throw that in with either team, taking the 6 points with Oklahoma or with Kansas State, I think you're going to be in good shape.
Agree.
Moving along to the Pac-12, really only two games of note this week. You've got Washington at Oregon, -20.5 for Oregon, and Stanford at Arizona State. Stanford's actually favored by 3 to 3.5, depending where you look.
Yep.
To me, that is wrong. Arizona State is a better team right now, and Taylor Kelly may return for this game. Probably it's going to be Berkovici, but either way, I actually think Arizona State's going to win this one outright. Another thing I'll say, as we were talking about undefeated against the spread, Stanford this year is 5-0 with the under. So I think I would go with the under, and I would go Arizona State with the 3.5, especially, as you said, if you can get the 3.5 instead of the 3, it's a great pickup.
Getting the half, I agree. Everything I was seeing today was still -3 at like -120 or -125, meaning it was like almost there, but it was still -3. And so I kind of thought stay away. Or back to Oregon for a second. What did you say? -20.5?
20.5.
And I've had it with them. Every time that I say, this is the week, they're going to be back to the old Oregon. And I go ahead and take them. For me, the worst one this year is when they lost outright to Arizona as a 24-point favorite. So I don't bet against them, but I'm never betting on them to cover again.
Right, and Oregon this year has a little bit of Florida State or the old Miami Hurricanes in them, in that they, they'll try just enough to win, but it doesn't seem like they're giving A-plus effort every single week.
But the program's also slipping because I watched them in person, it would be 3 years ago almost, at the Rose Bowl when Russell Wilson was the Wisconsin quarterback. And the two teams that day set a combined Rose Bowl record for points and yards. And Oregon won, I think, 45 to 38 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And they were unstoppable with DeAnthony Thomas, and they were just unstoppable. And they blew everyone out. And Wisconsin was really good that year and hung with them. But whoever had the ball last was going to score. And Oregon's not that team 3 years later. They've lost to Arizona two games in a row. They lost badly to Stanford as a huge favorite in 2012 was the first time I thought, this is not the same team. And I don't think they're the same program minus Chip Kelly.
You're not the only one to say that. I think, with enough of Chip Kelly's players this year and Mariota as, a strong upperclassman leader, I think they're good this year and they'll be okay this season. After Mariota, when they move on to their next guy, probably next year, that's going to be really interesting to see how they rebound. So next year, I really think will be a make or break year for Oregon football. All right, let's skip ahead to the SEC, talk about some of those games, and then we'll get to the Big Ten afterwards. We've got Georgia -3.5 at Arkansas. This game's in Little Rock. Gurley out, Marshall out, Sony Michel out. Nick Chubb will start. He had a great game last week. Brendan Douglas will be the backup. It must be nice to be Georgia, where you can have three guys who would start at any other school all out, and then you still have a totally capable, great running back in there.
Yep. I'm going to go Georgia. I think it's close, and Georgia pulls away late. And I think Arkansas is about to fall off, as usual.
So I'm staying away from this game, and the reason being that this will really be a benchmark for me for the rest of the season, betting these SEC East versus West games. You've got what is probably the best team in the East versus probably the worst team in the West. And it's only a 3.5 point line, which shows me that the West is very close to being totally better than the East, where if you stacked up all the teams in order, the, you know, what are there, 14 teams in the SEC?
Yep.
All of the West would be in the top 10 and possibly in the top, you know, 8 or 9. So I just think
Arkansas is close, but no cigar too much. And eventually that catches up with you and the players get demoralized. And I think they're on the cusp of that already. I actually like Georgia this week.
You're a Wisconsin guy. I mean, what do you think of Bielema? Is he going to get that program on the right track?
Yeah, he's doing a great job. It was in shambles when he got there. And look at where they are now. Even if Alabama's down this year, that was still a good outing by them last week. And here's the deal. They're going to play tough. They're going to have a tough mentality. And do you know when Bielema was at Wisconsin? I'll have to double check on this, but I think they never lost a game in his last 4 years there. They never lost a game by more than 7 points. They don't get blown out because they play tough. They control the clock. And he's implementing that. And they were bad last year. Now, all of a sudden, they're a lot. Even the record might not indicate it, but they're a lot better this year. I think he's doing a pretty good job.
Right. They'd be a top 3 or 4 team in the Big Ten and the ACC. They'd probably be the second best team in the ACC.
Yes. And yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And they're going to get – he's going to get his first win this season. I don't know who, but they're going to beat somebody at some point.
They'd be 2 or 3 in the Big Ten.
Right. I'd have them, I think, probably at 3. I think Ohio State's coming around, but we'll get to that. Okay, Missouri at Florida, -6 toward Florida, over under 48.5, which, you know, with Florida this year, I always lean under. Matty Mauk, 4 interceptions versus Georgia last week. Mauktober not going well.
No, but I think there's a little bit of overreact. See, I lean under too, but when you lean under, it's hard to say they're going to go under but win by a touchdown. So I think there's some overreaction to how bad Missouri was last week in that line. I would take Missouri.
Okay, well, let me be clear. I'm not taking Florida for the rest of the year. I just I like the under more than I like either of the sides.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like either of those teams, so they're not worthy of any more analysis.
No.
Kentucky at LSU. Here's one I like. Surprisingly, I like Kentucky. Even though it's at LSU, I think 9.5 is a little bit too much for this, you know, young rebuilding LSU team versus a Kentucky team that's really played well with a great new coach.
I agree. Program on the rise, I would go Kentucky.
Yeah, I think LSU wins it, but I think you're looking at a field goal game.
And that's another one, Tom, that I think is perfect to tease either way.
Right. If you can get, you know, Kentucky with, 15.5, I think that's a pretty solid bet. That one's probably coming.
And LSU to win by a field goal. Like, you could put them both in separate teasers and maybe middle.
Right. Which is never a great idea, but this might be a game to do it. That's living on the edge when you do that. All right. Tennessee at Ole Miss. I have a lot of numbers on this, and then I'll throw it to you for the analysis. So the line started at 19.5. Last I checked, it was down to 16.5. So clearly people, you know, think that Tennessee is going to keep it close. Over under 46.5. Ole Miss, 6-0 against the spread and 5-1 with the under this year. Tennessee, 4-1 with the under this year. To me, that says the under's got to be the bet if you're betting the over-under. Tennessee's, you know, for all they've improved, their best win is Utah State. They're 3-3, and they don't really have a super impressive win this season. So I guess I would lean under. I don't think I could put money on Tennessee. I think I would have to go Ole Miss and then hope for, you know, something like a 30-13 victory. That way you get Ole Miss and the under.
This one probably more than any other, even at Well, first of all, when it opened, I would have taken Tennessee, but down to 16 and a half.
Another thing I should mention, you know, of course, this is kind of not that there's an easy week or a week where you can let up in the SEC, but Ole Miss has such a tough schedule. This is, if there's one time when they could sort of mail it in, this is the week, which makes me a little hesitant.
And that's why at 18 or 19 or 19 and a half, I would take Tennessee. But at 16 and a half, I think I'm going to take Ole Miss. And I think maybe they're up by 10 and they score late.
I'm looking at a 17-point win.
You love to say stay away because I've read your picks columns a lot. And if I were writing that as you, that this is one I would probably say stay away because you're right. Tennessee shouldn't score much on Ole Miss, right? I mean, right. They just shouldn't. But Ole Miss could be – it's a trap game. So
the reason I do stay away so often is because, you know, several years ago when I started doing this – I would, first I would just pick games. You know, if I wrote a column, it was 7 picks or 8 picks, and I would just pick the games where I really liked the line. But then I realized it would be, you know, Alabama, Texas A&M would be one game I picked, and then 5 of the games would be like Marshall against East Carolina. I realized, you know, people coming to read this, they don't really care if I get the pick right or wrong. They care about breakdown of the good games. I decided I'm just going to now give my picks on the best games of the week, except I don't always have a pick. So that's why I lean heavily to the stay away.
So I'll say, just for the sake of an opinion, I'll say late cover by Ole Miss in that one.
Yeah, my feeling is just based on the numbers, Ole Miss 6-0 against the spread, you got to go Ole Miss. And both teams being 5-1 and 4 again and 1 with the under, you have to go the under. Now it's tough for both of those to line up, but I think something like a 30-10 or 30-13 win will get you that.
I do like the energy of the home crowd while they are still kind of driving an undefeated drive, you know, in control of their own destiny team.
Right. Riding high off the season.
So even if they come out lethargic, hopefully the crowd carries them.
Okay, so one thing I want to mention before we move on, the numbers that I mentioned are courtesy of the Lines Makers, which is a site I wasn't familiar with until a week or two ago, but I like their work, and I decided I wanted to follow them on Twitter. So I accidentally searched Lines Maker, which is a different one, but also a sports gambling, you know, Twitter feed. And you know how it says, like, followed by Sam Pierce, or it tells you which of your friends or other followers follow that person? The Lines Makers, a sports and poker betting Twitter feed, followed by Barack Obama.
Yeah, but is it the actual one?
I think so. I mean, I don't think I follow any fake Barack Obamas.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure Barack Obama doesn't run his own Twitter feed. It's probably some 24-year-old kid who just was like, fuck it, I'm on Twitter all day, you know, stumping for Barack Obama. I want to see some lines.
No, I actually have the answer to that. It's the it's his campaign group that actually runs his Twitter feed.
Still, I love the fact that they're out there like, we got to beat Mitt Romney. We got to beat John McCain. But I'd like to see whether Florida's going to cover against Missouri. Okay, so we've got Texas A&M at Alabama, -11.5. That's a big line in favor of Alabama. Texas A&M's a ranked team, or I don't know if they're ranked anymore, but they were. We've got an over-under of 61.5. I don't know what to think about Alabama. They struggled against Arkansas. They lost to Ole Miss, obviously. Their matchup against Texas A&M is a much more favorable matchup because Texas A&M can't really stop the run. And Alabama, as we know, is a great running team. So I think I lean under for this one. And I think I probably would lean, I don't know. I don't know. This could go either way. I think I would lean Alabama, but my certainty level is about 17%.
I am going to take Texas A&M. I think it's rare to see something become a rivalry game as fast as this one has. And because of that, I think I'm going to go with Texas A&M.
Okay. You ready to do some Big Ten talk?
A bunch of the teams are off this week, but
Yeah, unfortunately, you being a Wisconsin guy and me being a Penn State guy, we literally picked the worst week to get together
I
and
know.
talk about this stuff. I want to do a mid-season report on Penn State, and then I'll let you do a mid-season report on Wisconsin. Penn State, as I've mentioned week after week, their offensive line looks horrible. Last week, losing to Michigan, which is just not, you don't want to be the team that loses to
Not this
Michigan.
year.
They couldn't run block. They couldn't pass protect. I think there is a genuine possibility that Penn State won't win another game if that's the way they play. I think at this point of the season, you have to start weaving in some of the backups and giving them a shot. There's nowhere to go but up. I started to question James Franklin's in-game coaching during the Michigan game. I think he's a great coach. He's a great, figurehead for the program. He's a smart guy. He says the right things. He's an awesome recruiter, but he's been making some questionable calls in the games that I'd like to see fixed. He calls plays that don't work. He continues to call them over and over. He's a little too risk averse for my taste and for 2014 football. He blew a desperately needed timeout that would have given them a chance to have an extra drive at the end of the game, but he wasted it at a time they didn't really need to. So I think those are some things he needs to work out. I'm not ready to throw him under the bus. I do think he's a great coach, and he did a wonderful job at Vanderbilt, but they've got to fix the O-line, and they've got to just start being more aggressive and smarter about some of the play
He's
calling.
also dealing with loss of scholarships for 2 years, right?
Right. And so this will be the worst year of Penn State football. Next year, they should pick up a little. The following year, they should pick up a little more. In 2016, if all goes according to plan, is when they should really be a competitor in the Big Ten and, possibly like a highly ranked team.
Because they smartly lifted all the whatever sanctions were still.
Right. And they're eligible for a bowl this year now. Whether they can actually make it to one remains to
But
be
just for the
seen.
record, while we're recording, I want to make it clear. I hate Bob Costas so much for when he gave a soliloquy on TV about how Penn State needs to be held accountable. They must penalize the program. Those kids had nothing to do with any of the Sandusky crap. And so I was so happy for you guys the day that they said, hey, we've eliminated the bowl ban and you get your scholarships back.
Right. And it's tough. I agree with you. The kids there have nothing to do with it. But on the other hand, the argument's going to be, if you don't punish them now, then what are you supposed to do? You can't go back and punish the guys who are in the NFL or coaches who are long gone
But those
or
kids, but those,
Joe
but
Paterno
the
who's
guys that
dead.
are in the NFL now, I don't think were guilty either. So tell Penn State, hey, give us your books and how much money did you make on football this year? And you must donate every penny of that to shelters and programs for child abuse. Like, there's other ways to do something meaningful monetarily to punish the program and set the program back and set these kids back that were there already. I think it was so wrong.
Yeah, it's a tough situation.
If you so this creep in the nine in the late 90s and then into the 2000s, if you were 8 years old when this was happening and now you've committed to Penn State and you're playing college football and like you're the one that should bear the brunt of it, I will never understand that. I will never understand the logic. I don't know. We're off on a way off on a tangent, but
Right, it's tough, and we've mentioned this many times, especially the last couple of years, and I'm tired of talking about it, I
So
guess.
back to Penn State, just I thought they were going to have a good year until that Northwestern game. And now I don't want to be as doom and gloom as you about they might not win another game this year, but we'll see.
Right, and I mean, if they play the way they played the last couple games, the offensive line, I just don't see how Hackenberg can get anything done when he's got, 1 second to throw. But Penn State always improves as the year goes on, and I think they'll improve, but it's going to be a rough year. And that's just the deal. You know, when they got the sanctions, all of us fans, you know, some fans fought it harder than others. My feeling was what happened happened. They dished out the penalty. Let's just suck it up and deal with this sanctions. They're going to suck for 4 years and then they'll be back. And it's fine with me. I mean, I love college football. I'm happy to watch Oregon and Baylor games for 4 years and enjoy those, even if Penn State sucks. So I guess, you know, I'm not as crazy as some other fans. Your turn. I want to get into Wisconsin. Forget about Penn State. Wisconsin talk.
So number one, back to our Heisman thing, Melvin Gordon. He's not going to win. He is fantastic. Not going to win the Heisman, I should say. He is fantastic, though. But they don't have a quarterback, and it's an ongoing problem. A friend of mine, who fellow alumni, said to me earlier this year, he said, so Wisconsin has two quarterbacks.
Right, so they've got Stave. Oh, we've discussed ad nauseum. Stave, who had the yips, but he wasn't great to begin with. And then Tanner McAvoy.
Terrible. He's not great. He's terrible.
Yeah, and then Tanner McAvoy somehow may be worse.
No, I disagree. And
is there any hope for either of these guys?
Yes, and here's where I'm going with this. So do you remember a few years ago when, like, legitimate, not Syracuse Eagles fans because of McNabb, but legitimate Eagles fans, which you may know from your Penn State days?
Yes.
When legitimate Eagles fans were saying, we want McNabb gone. We've seen how this movie ends. We know the ceiling. We know that we're going to lose in the playoffs with McNabb, and he's going to suck in the playoffs. And like, we know how this ends. Like, let's move on. Mm-hmm. So that's how intelligent Wisconsin fans feel about Stave. We know how this ends. That we're going to lose the Rose Bowl. Like, if you go get the best stiff non-mobile quarterback from high school football in Wisconsin, like, that's Stave. And for Stave's like 4 or 5 years there, it just happens to be he's worse than most of them normally are. We know how it ends. A fellow alumni and one of my best friends put it really well. He said, I'd rather go 0-12 with McAvoy and have our coach signal, it's the start of a new era. We're not playing that way anymore because we're sick of winning 9 or 10 games a year and losing on a January 1 bowl game to the SEC or the Pac-12. We hate Stave. We don't want anything to do with him. Like, go, like you were saying that Terrell Hunt needs to go away. Like, Stave needs to go away and never come back. And Mac, like, if neither one can throw, at least McAvoy can run. You can set up different sets with him. Stave couldn't hit Aubert Harris on a deep, skinny post pattern. It's really, 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 really frustrating and maddening. So I want Stave to go away. We have another kid from Jacksonville, DJ Gillens, that's a freshman that graduated high school early, came in the spring. Hopefully they'll get him involved next year. But if they stick with the stiff Wisconsin quarterback methodology that they went away from 1 year with Russell Wilson and look how good they were, then it's just more of the same. And they brought in Gary Anderson, this Western coach, and he brought in McAvoy from a Western JUCO, and he's been recruiting out West a little bit. I'm hoping he sticks to his methods and transforms the program a little bit. That's just my disgruntled alumni opinion.
Where do you see them finishing this year?
Not good. They're going to lose to Nebraska and Iowa. So the North worst loss was terrible, and they gave up 28 points to Illinois, who might be the worst Power 5 team in the country last week at home. So they are going to finish about 8-4, 7-5.
Yeah, that's got to be frustrating coming into the season thinking you've got a pretty clear road to the Big Ten West and the championship game. And, you know, Nebraska's not great. They're okay. Iowa's been disappointing. Basically, the whole West is not great.
I actually think Nebraska's pretty good.
Yeah?
I actually think Michigan State is really good, but their worst fear is Nebraska in the championship game. So they played last week, and Nebraska came back and almost got right back into that game. It was in East Lansing, their 1970s Soviet Union stadium. And I think that Michigan State's worst fear is Nebraska wins the West, which they probably will, and gets a second crack at them in the conference championship game. Because when you have to beat a team twice, it's really hard. They get Iowa or Wisconsin, neither one of which is on Michigan State's schedule. Michigan State wins, they go on to probably the playoff. Right. They get Nebraska, watch out. Nebraska will know them. They'll get another crack at them. They came back. I actually think Nebraska's okay by Big Ten standards.
Well, yes, that's a major caveat, though.
But I think Michigan State can play with most teams, and I think Nebraska can too.
So I think Michigan State's a top 10 team. I think they're a playoff caliber team. I'm not sure what's wrong with them. You know, they barely survived Purdue. They let Nebraska back into that game.
That was their only bad game.
Well, they played great. They blew out Nebraska for 3.5 quarters, and then they let them right back in. So there seems to be a motivational problem.
But Tom, what game does that not happen in now? We talked about TCU Baylor. Mississippi State gets up big on these teams in the SEC, and they come back. Alabama beats Arkansas by a point.
Right, and to their credit, you know, Florida State, you know, when they play these bad teams, they might not score as many points as you think, and they might not blow people away, but they win pretty handily. You know, when they play like a Syracuse, who's, you know, probably better than Purdue, they really win with decisiveness.
So Florida State on the road beats Cuse by 18, and Michigan State beats Purdue by 14. Is that on the road?
But Purdue was driving. Michigan State only won by 14 because they got a pick six right at the end of the game. I mean, that's a game where Purdue could have tied it up.
Fair enough.
Anyway.
The Nebraska game I don't hold against them. Nebraska is going to be a top 20, probably top 15 team most of the season. So.
Right. To me, it's just that Michigan State played so well in the first 3.5 quarters. They seem to, you know, take their foot off the gas. And I think if they want to finish out the season undefeated and become a playoff team, they have the talent, but they need more of a killer instinct. And that might go into coaching or, you know, leadership by Connor Cook. What is your feeling, you know, being a Wisconsin guy? Do you want to see the conference succeed? Do you want to see, I mean, I think at this point, Michigan State is probably the best chance for a playoff team.
Do you want them
to succeed, or would you rather they just go down in flames and we get no playoffs?
I'd rather go down in flames. I don't like any Big Ten teams outside of Madison. I hate them all. I know I'm in the minority that everybody else that's a college fan roots for their conference. I never do that. I hate them. I want Wisconsin to do well, and I don't want our rivals to win. Okay. Same as I'm a Giants fan in NFL, and I would never root for Philly and the Cowboys and the Redskins. So why would I root for Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State? I don't do that ever.
Well, good. Everyone is entitled to their own beliefs. You shouldn't try to fight it. If you hate the teams, then fuck them. Let them lose. Do you have any picks for Big Ten this week? We've got Ohio State hosting Rutgers, a 19.5-point line. We've got Michigan State at Indiana, Nebraska at Northwestern. Anything?
I think Ohio State covers late. I think that the Michigan one scares me. What do you have for Nebraska Northwestern? Like minus,
I have a minus 7.
Northwest has beaten Penn State and Wisconsin now.
Yeah, and they're at home. They're something about them. I mean, they lost their two biggest playmakers before the season, but they've showed a lot of heart. So and I know you hate them, but
Nebraska needed a Hail Mary at home to beat Northwest last year.
Right. I would not lay the 7 with Nebraska in that game. No way.
At seven, even I would probably take Northwest. If it got below a touchdown, I would take Nebraska, but not for 7.
Yeah, man, Purdue at Minnesota. I'm not touching that game. And then Iowa at Maryland.
I would take Minnesota in that game.
Yeah,
I would take Minnesota, and Minnesota is always my argument for why Syracuse needs to build a stadium. When all these idiots around town tell me, "Yeah, but it's Syracuse. It's cold." Well, every team in the Big Ten plays outdoors. And Minnesota, you know, Minnesota was the last team other than Syracuse to play in a dome when they played in the Vikings' old dome. And they built TCF, and I've been there, and it's gorgeous. And they have close to a sellout every game now. And their program's on the rise because they built this awesome outdoor stadium, which is how college football should be played. They have a good home field advantage. I kind of like Minnesota.
Okay. I agree with you on Syracuse. They build an outdoor stadium, especially if it snows. That's a huge advantage. Florida State comes up and has to play in the snow.
How great would it be if Clemson or Florida State was 10-0 and coming to play Syracuse in November?
Yeah, you think Cole Stout wants to come up in the snow and throw passes? No.
No, and it just, and first of all, it's not that cold.
No, well, listen, no night games. I mean, that's a given. They'd have to play at noon or 3:30.
Wait, but the Big Ten plays night games in November?
Yeah, and it's fucking freezing. I would never go to another one. I went to Penn State, Michigan at night, and I would never do that again. It's so cold.
I don't know. I think it's fun, and if you have ranked teams, I don't think you lack attendance.
Well, I guess it depends on who you play, but
anyway. So I like Minnesota's outdoor TCF Stadium. It's beautiful. I like it. I think they cover against Purdue this weekend.
Okay, Iowa at Maryland. Maryland 4-point favorite. Any thoughts? Actually, new line, Maryland minus 5.
Oh, I'm taking Iowa. I might take Iowa money line.
Iowa frustrates me. They never, you know, some weeks they play great, other weeks they lose to Iowa State. I don't know what to make of them.
And they've been like that for a long time, but the Iowa State game is the only one this year you can say that they didn't play well.
True. And that is sort of a rivalry game. So
they've been quietly sneaky good this year. Minus the Iowa State game.
Okay, I want to move on because we're over time and nobody needs to hear about Iowa.
You have loyal listeners, though.
That's true, but nobody wants to listen for that long. So okay. It is time for the game of the week. Undefeated Notre Dame at Florida State. Just bounced down to number 2, but, you know, one of the best teams in the country, if not the best. The line was 10. Earlier today, it got taken off the board for some reason that I don't know. I don't know what it is now, but let's just say, for the sake of argument, that it's a 10-point line. Mm-hmm. I see a few things. First off, Florida State could lose and still make the playoff. Notre Dame, on the other hand, absolutely needs to win this if they want to be in the playoff. Florida State jumps out at you at first. You know, nobody really believes in Notre Dame, but it does remind me a little bit of a couple years ago when Notre Dame went to Oklahoma and everybody said, you know, they're going to get blown out. Oklahoma's way better. And Notre Dame came away with a big win. I think the Notre Dame team is pretty good. I think having Golson is really what turned that team from the Tommy Rees, you know, 7-5 team to obviously to the national championship or the national title game team of a couple of years ago. And now that he's back and he's playing like his old self, I actually think Notre Dame's pretty legitimate. I'm not saying they're going to win, but I feel like at 10 points, Vegas is almost begging me to take Notre Dame. And I don't like it because I don't like Notre Dame, but I don't feel comfortable, you know, laying 10 with Florida State in this game.
Me too. So for the sake of this conversation, Jameis is obviously playing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. I don't think that Jameis is going to, I mean, he is Cam Newton esque in his ability to avoid consequences for his actions.
Could you pick two schools other than Auburn and Florida State that just don't give a fuck? Like, I mean, we're going to win at all costs and we do not care what the consequences are.
We don't have time to really get into this, but I urge everyone to read the New York Times article on Florida State.
The scooter story was my favorite, by the way.
Oh yeah.
The wide receiver that stole the scooter, and the police officer said, "Did you steal this?" And he said, "No, I borrowed it from someone." He said, "Who'd you borrow it from?" And he said, "I can't remember their name." And the police officer said, "Oh, it sounds like a likely story," and just lets him go. But yeah, your listeners should definitely Google it, read the whole story about the Tallahassee Police Department and just accommodating the Florida State program. It's great.
Shooting BB guns. I mean, these guys basically drove around doing drive-bys with these like high-powered BB guns, like hitting people who were in line for bars, damaging cars and stuff, and there's just no consequences. And the police were well aware. It's not like it was mysterious people. I mean, the police knew who did this stuff.
Exactly.
Jameis Winston is heavily involved, as is a guy named Jesus Bobo Wilson, which is a great name.
It is.
He was actually a late pickup in my fantasy felon draft that I did a couple weeks ago. Jameis was the number two overall pick, and Bobo Wilson was a late round pick. I think.
Wait, who's number one?
So I can't remember number one, but yeah, it was a definite Bowie Jordan situation where somebody screwed it up big time.
Okay.
I forget who it was, but it was some NFL player, somebody who was not a great human being, but did not have the record of a Jameis Winston.
Well, back to the game, because I know we got to move along. Although your reader should read that, you know. Oh, one more thing about the New York Times article. I guess since there's zero circulation of the New York Times in Tallahassee, that's how the Times investigative team got all the dirt, because they came in there and said, we're from the New York Times. And everyone in Tallahassee said, what's that? So that's how they got all the scoop.
Never heard of it at all.
Like, it's not like Wall Street Journal, New York Times aren't circulated in Tallahassee. So, you know, you can show up as an investigative reporter, give your credentials, and they give you the scoop anyway.
The fact that they don't know the New York Times, even if there's no circulation, they don't have the internet.
I don't think Jimbo knows the New York Times. But
anyway. His name's Jimbo. I wouldn't expect too much in terms of worldly knowledge.
When you hear Jimbo, don't you think of Mr. Walsh?
Yes, absolutely.
Me too. I always hear that, and then I have to remember, no, that's actually a guy's name. Okay, back to this game. I just hate Notre Dame in
general or in this particular line? Because I hate them in general, but I like them in this particular bet. Got to bet with your head, not with your heart.
No, I know. Notre Dame has good line play, not just quarterback. Like, they have good line play on both sides of the ball.
Right. They're a good team. They're well-rounded almost everywhere.
I think at 10, I would take them. And if it were 9.5, I'd take Florida State. But it pains me to say that. Because they also suck sometimes, and then you say to yourself, same old Notre Dame, like in the national championship, because wasn't that about a 10-point line?
So that was, I think, something like 12, 13-point line, and obviously they got blown out. But that was a different story. That was a, otherworldly Alabama team. I mean, one of the best teams Alabama has had, and at the peak of their dynasty. Florida State is not as good as they were last year, even though they're one of the best teams in the country. They're vulnerable. You know, watching them throughout the season, I don't think Florida State is as good as last year. I don't think they're infallible. I think they could lose. I actually...
I don't, not at home.
Well, here's what I'm looking at. I think they edge this one out by a field goal or so. I'm actually circling that game on a Thursday night at Louisville as a potential sleeper upset. So I think if you're Florida State, obviously you're focused on this game now, but once that Louisville game comes around, I wouldn't sleep on that one. Louisville's got a really good defense. Their quarterback's okay. They could surprise them. I think Florida State really gets up for this and they get the win, but I think it's going to be very, very close.
This is the toughest call, but at 10, I'm with you. I would take Notre Dame.
I don't love it, but you know, in a big game, this is going to be Notre Dame's Super Bowl.
I would be refreshing my browser, and if it went to 9.5, then I would take Florida State.
Right, and conversely, I would feel a lot better if I could get Notre Dame at 10.5 or 11.
Oh, sure. No, I like your reference of the Oklahoma 2 years ago Notre Dame game, and both of the last two Stanford games, this year and 2 years ago.
Right. Brian Kelly's a good coach, and he'll get them ready. I don't think people will look at that North Carolina game where they gave up 43 points and it took some tough play to win. I think you can wipe that one off the schedule. That was sort of a trap game. I am a little concerned that they would give up 43 points, but yeah, I don't know. I think they're going to play a little bit over their head, and they're going to play like this is their Super Bowl, and that's why I like them to cover.
Well, it has to be because they don't have a championship game.
Right, and this is their playoff resume. If they lose this game, Stanford's not looking great this year. That's not going to be as quality of a win.
And with the new committee that's made up of like ADs from elsewhere, they don't get special treatment anymore, right, unless they go out and win a game like this. So this is their season.
Right. And like I said, for Florida State, even if they lose, I still think they're going to be right in that top four or five.
Okay. Fair enough.
But, you know, if I'm just picking straight up, I'm picking Florida State. I think you're looking at a 3 to 4 point game.
Wow. You really like Notre Dame in this game.
Nope. I just think Florida State's slightly overrated, and I think Notre Dame's going to play above their head.
Okay.
Maybe the cops will arrest some of the Notre Dame players before the game, since they clearly seem to be looking out for the team.
They might. That's not outside the realm of possibility. And
if tomorrow night one of the Notre Dame players gets arrested, then you know something shady is happening, and that's when you need to back off.
Yeah.
All right, that's about all we have this week. Thank you, Sam, for joining us and for guest hosting. It's been a very informing and enlightening experience.
I hope I lived up to it. I know this. I know Take the Points podcast is a big deal, so the pleasure was mine.
Yeah, sure it is. Well, I will pretend that it is. Thank you. Come back and join us later. We've got a lot more to talk about. And for everyone else, find us on iTunes or takethepoints.net. Thank you for listening. Take the point, bye. Take the point. Take the point. Take the point. Take the point. Take the point.